there you are. Welcome back to Techonomics. I'm host Jason Middleton. Up next, healthcare, as in the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare. No less than four major for-profit health insurance companies are severely pulling back from offering plans in the Obamacare exchanges. Two such companies really stand out, Humana and Aetna. Aetna, specifically, reported a $200 million loss for its second quarter of 2016. Thing is, Aetna wants to merge with Humana, and that may well be the real rub. In a letter to the Department of Justice regarding the potential merger, the CEO of Aetna wrote, quote, "If the DOJ sues to enjoin the transaction, we will immediately take action to reduce our 2017 exchange footprint," end quote. Aetna had planned an expansion of its Obamacare offerings if the Justice Department stood back. Now that the DOJ is blocking the merger, Aetna is abandoning 70% of the counties it now serves. So to look at the overall health of the Affordable Care Act, we spoke with someone who has been doing data research on the new-ish law for 5 years.
Kev Coleman, head of research and data at Health Pocket.
When I had my older show a couple of years ago, you and I spoke about the research you were doing into the ACA. It has since launched, obviously. But we have kind of a two-inch headline. Aetna has decided to limit most, if not almost all, of its offerings via the ACA. What are you seeing there?
Well, certainly there's a lot of market concern about this, not because it's Aetna, but rather that Aetna is part of a larger trend that we're seeing among some commercial insurers that they're exiting many exchanges across the U.S. You know, with respect to Aetna, they're going to be in about 70% fewer states than they had in 2016 for the upcoming enrollment season. For UnitedHealthcare, they're going to exit most exchanges. Humana announced that they were only going to offer plans in 156 counties in 11 states, down from 1,351 counties across 19 states in 2016. Then you have individual movement in other states, like Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota is exiting the individual private insurance business completely. And all of this is happening at the same time that we see a collapse in many of the co-ops. These co-ops were nonprofit insurance companies initiated by the Affordable Care Act, and back in 2014 when the Affordable Care Act launched, there were about 23, and their numbers have dwindled down to seven, with six of the remaining seven in existence being placed on corrective action plans. And a corrective action plan is enforced on a co-op when CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, finds deficiencies in finances, operations, and exchange compliance. There's a lot of concern there. And this Aetna story is just part of a larger narrative that we're witnessing in the U.S. right now.
So in the first quarter, Aetna says that it lost $200 million off its bottom line. Now, Aetna is a pretty well-run company, but it's also an insurance company. And with the Fed keeping the rates so low, they can make no money on their savings. So that might have contributed to this as well. Now, I'm not saying it's a Trojan horse. I'm sure there are issues here, as you have indicated, with the ACA. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering, isn't it more that we can't attract the people that are healthy?
That's one of the things that's being claimed, and certainly the young group of people between 18 and 34 years old have not enrolled in the numbers that had been wanted and anticipated. However, with that said, the enrollees are sicker and more expensive than had originally been anticipated, and as such, you would need even more, young, healthy people enrolling to compensate for this. I'm unconvinced that this is merely a problem with not enrolling enough of the millennials. Another thing that's forgotten about enrolling millennials is that health insurance prices are age-banded. The younger you are, less expensive. Older you are, more expensive. Mm-hmm. So it takes a lot more young people who are paying in and not really using much in terms of services to compensate for more expensive people on the other end of the age band.
We're speaking with Kev Coleman, Director of Research and Data for Health Pocket. Let's talk about big picture. Help me see the healthcare horizon now. We're in a presidential election year, so there's probably not much going to happen before that happens. But what does this mean for the ACA, having these four large private companies pulling out of offering, let's just go with a majority of their offerings via Obamacare?
I think the biggest concern is around regions where there's only going to be one insurance company left. In most counties across the U.S., you'll still have multiple insurers, which is very good because some government studies have established that when you have three or more insurance companies within a region, benchmark premiums are about 9% lower than those with only one or two insurance companies. Pfizer recently did a study on the publicly available 2017 rate filings and found that 664 counties across the U.S. will only have one insurance company. And this number is expected to go higher because of two factors. One of them is that not all the rate filings are public. Different states have different rules in terms of what they make publicly accessible. The other issue is that we're still waiting for the approvals on the rate increase requests. And some insurance companies have requested very high increases to their premiums, 40%, 60%, et cetera. If those rate increases are not approved, you may have even more insurer departures. And of course, the big concern is that, a lack of competition and more counties, even in some counties, you might find no insurance companies on exchange. There will be situations where you might have entire states like South Carolina and Alabama with only one insurance company on exchange. That's a big concern.
My next question is going to sound political because there's a name in it, but I don't want it to be political. I'd like a definition from you as director of data and research. Now, Hillary Clinton has pledged to modify the law to expand coverage and wants to add a public insurance option. Can you explain to me, please, what a public insurance option is?
Well, a public insurance option would be a health insurance that is administered by the government. Think about things like Original Medicare. That is, government-based insurance, Medicaid, government-based insurance. One of the problems with this proposal is the fact that it comes on the heel of a lot of structural problems with the government working within healthcare. We've spent an enormous amount of money transforming the individual insurance marketplace, and rates are a lot more expensive than they were pre-reform. Now, there's more benefits, there's guaranteed issue, but we tend to forget that there's lots of people within the U.S. health insurance market who don't qualify for subsidies. And with these ever-increasing premiums without effective cost controls, that's a concern. At the same time, you also have the co-ops, which had gotten billions of dollars in loans from the government. They're government-initiated, and they're using these government loans, and almost all of them have failed. And out of the seven that are remaining, six out of seven are under corrective action plans. That's a huge concern. So why is the public going to think the government has credibility saying, oh, we'll cure this by doing yet another government plan? I think those are very legitimate objections.
Real quickly, let's dig into corrective action plan. What exactly does that mean?
A corrective action plan is when the government takes a look at the finances, operations, compliance of a co-op health insurer and says there are profound problems. We have to make sure that these things are addressed or you're not going to be allowed to offer health insurance anymore.
In the interest of fair time, Donald Trump says he would just repeal Obamacare, specifically, according to Reuters and his Twitter feed. Last question. Now, you may have already answered it under a different name, single payer. That came up a lot with Bernie Sanders' campaign, and
right.
It came up a lot during Obamacare, being politically debated as well. Is that DOA?
Well, once again, I don't want to in any way engage in political advocacy, but I can say from a consumer perspective, they can take a look at the relative results of the most recent health reform and say, do you really have credibility as a government to initiate another type of health insurance coverage and do it effectively? Right now, what the government does most effectively is cover over health insurance costs through subsidies, but that still creates a very asymmetrical benefit across the populace. You have some people who have a great deal of benefit from that, where they're paying very little for their health insurance coverage, and other people whose costs have gone through the roof. That brings up, I think, larger questions of equity. Ideally, good health insurance reform will be a tide that raises all ships. It'll be something with broad-based benefits across the population rather than, as I said, very asymmetrical benefits. Some people finding this is great and some people finding this is very bad.
So if I don't get a subsidy and my costs have skyrocketed, what are my options?
That's a great question. In terms of private health insurance, there are some other options. One of them that existed actually pre-Obamacare was healthcare sharing ministries. These are religiously based organizations that do health cost sharing, and it's a lot less expensive than Affordable Care Act insurance in general. Another option would be things like limited duration health insurance plans, otherwise known as short-term health insurance. One of the issues with that is that it does have, you know, medical underwriting. If you have expensive pre-existing conditions, you may not get accepted for this type of coverage. But if you do get accepted, which is the case, I think, for about 90% of applicants, it'll be a lot less expensive.
Thanks for helping us relate to all that, Kev. And I think both of us were able to take the political high road on there. At least I hope so.
I would like to think so. It's very important for me to stay unbiased.
We've been speaking with Kevin Coleman, Director of Research and Data for Health Pocket.
Thanks very much. Take care.
Coming up after this short break, we'll close the show with something close to all of us, our genetics. A massive new study sheds light on our DNA and its link to clinical depression. I'm Jason Middleton. This is Techonomics. Come on back for 23andUs.